Well, shoot, let's just get going then, huh? So we're in Luke 22, 47 through 53. I'm going to read it, and we're going to do stuff. This is Jesus. Well, he was still speaking, right? Behold, a crowd came, and the one called Judas, one of the 12, was preceding them, and he approached Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, "Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?" When those who were around him saw what was going to happen, they said, "Lord, shall we strike with the sword?" And one of them struck the slave of the high priest and cut off his right ear. But Jesus answered and said, "Stop, no more of this." And he touched his ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests and officers of the temple and elders who had come against him, "Have you come out with swords and clubs as you would against a robber? While I was with you daily in the temple, you did not lay hands on me, but this hour and the power of darkness are yours." So I feel like this is kind of a familiar story, and maybe not, but I feel like it is. And just as I was kind of going through this, I really felt like instead of having like a point to this passage, it was more like, that's mine, yeah. An opportunity to just kind of like identify with different characters in the story. And so there's not necessarily like a main thing, but I think sometimes, especially with familiar things, or like this passage even seems like it's kind of a stepping stone to the rest. Like, so, no, we're going to the crucifixion. Like, let's just get there. This is just kind of like, yeah, that happened to get us there. And I think that sometimes when things are familiar or they feel that way, if we just like take a step back and just realize like these are people and it's not just a static thing, just like this is the only part of the story we ever read, but all these people have histories and backstories that led to this moment. And I think it's worth just pausing and just taking like a little bit of an approach from different viewpoints as to what's happening here. So I think it makes for a poor, what'd you learn at church tonight? I learned this, but I think because there's not like one thing, but I think that each, you know, person has something that we can kind of take from that. And so my prayer is, Lord, that you would just reveal this text to us just in a new way, and that you would just, not through some clever thing I've come up with or some like radical like point that just resonates with us, but just through just taking time to just really soak in your word, that you would just show us things in our own lives that just resonate with what's happening here, whether that's with who you are and what you were doing, or just through the other characters and their parts they played in this kind of this unfolding of history, just that you would just open our hearts and just reveal new truths to us as we just kind of just take time to just sit in this part of this story for a little bit. So yeah, we just thank you for this time that we can do that. Thank you that your word is alive and is real, and you can speak to us through any part of it. We just thank you for that. In your name, amen. So, so I got a few people. I just want to, there's books that do this, right? Like, I think As It Lay Dying is maybe one where, like, every chapter is, like, a new, I don't read a whole lot. Harry Potter, is that, yeah, Harry Potter, I'm pretty sure every chapter is a new, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. There's whatever. So Judas, right? Obviously, this story is like about Judas, and everybody has a backstory, right? And so just imagine, just slip his shoes on for a while, right? Like just step into his place, and what brought you to this point, right? Like you've been with Jesus for 3 years. He trusted you, right? Like you're one of the 12. You're doing his kingdom work, the stuff that he's like bringing into the world. You're a part of it. And very specifically, like he sent the 12 out to do his work, and he sent the 70 out, and the 12 were a part of that. And they come back and they're like, "No way, Jesus, like the demons are subject to us in your name." And Jesus is like, "I know, I saw Satan falling from the sky. Like, it's awesome." And like, you're doing this stuff, right? You're like, you're doing it. You're part of the team, right? For 3 years, you're doing this. You're going with him and seeing him heal people and taking time for people and doing all this stuff. And not only that, but he's got like Judas has like got a position of what? He's got like a position. He's the money bag guy, right? He's like the treasurer. And so it's not just like a guy. He's got like, you know, an actual like office or you know, some authority with that. And Jesus trusts him. And I don't know why. I don't know why, but it says that, not in Luke, but in Matthew, that Judas goes and seeks out the chief priests, right? He goes to them and asks, like, what are you willing to give me to betray him to you? And I just think that's bizarre. Like, maybe if the chief priest came to him and like, oh, he looks like the weak one. We'll pick him off and maybe he can be our inside man. But it's not that. That's not how it goes. Like, Judas actually seeks them out. And I don't know. So they're like, yeah, all right, we can give you something. So they weigh out 30 pieces of silver. And it's like about $600, they say. So it's, you know, I mean, you know, that's $600. That's, you know, that'll do something. But it's not like loads and loads of cash. And I don't get it, though, because he already helps himself to the money bag, like, under the table anyways. So I don't think that's really what he's looking for is money. Maybe he went and sought them out, like, looking for some sort of, like, status or, like, a title to be given to him or maybe some social status or something. Maybe he's still stuck in this religious system of, like, well, yeah, I know we're doing this, like, Jesus kingdom thing over here, but they're the priests. Come on. Like, they're the ones who, like, offer sacrifices and get me into heaven or something. I don't know. He's, like, got some baggage with that. I don't know what he was seeking out when he went to them, but he does. He goes and says, like, all right, what do you give me? And they're like, we'll give you $600. And maybe he's just like, well, I'm in too deep at this point to turn around. I'll take the money, whatever. So he does. He commits, right, to betraying Jesus. But then he just goes back to his normal life, right? Just like hanging out with Jesus, hanging out with the disciples, eating some food together. But like, he knows he's a traitor at this point, right? Like, he's already sold Jesus out, even though the action of it hasn't happened. But shoot, like, Jesus knows it too. And at the Lord's Supper, you know, he says, I mean, so there's like four, this story shows up in all four Gospels, right? So you get like different sides of things. And so it's not all something maybe we've studied here, but like Jesus says, like, oh, the man whose hand is on the table with me right now, he's the traitor. He's like, just move your hand real quick or whatever, you know? And like, and even talks to him, right? He's just like, all right, what you're going to do, go do it quickly. She's like, okay then, right? I mean, he knows that Jesus knows. And then I don't know, at this point I feel like his head's just got to be swimming. He's just like, all right, get out of here. And so he leaves to go do what he's about to do quickly, right? And he's like, oh man, Jesus knows, but he told me to go. Like, what do I do? Ah. And then it comes to this time where the time actually comes, right? And I don't know why he chooses a kiss, right? Like, that's a good thing. It's a common greeting to greet someone with a kiss. I don't know why he uses that to disobey or disown his friend, right? To turn against him. And I just get curious. Like, I have all these questions. Like, well, how long was this deception brewing in him? Or, I mean, aside from, like, it says, you know, Satan literally, like, enters into him. But was there more going on there? What was the thing that drove him to that? Like, what was he seeking that he didn't have? And he felt like, oh, I got to do this for some reason. And, like, what led to that mindset? And when I just think about that, I just think, like, but wait, like, Jesus is enough. Like, Judas didn't get it. Like, we don't need to go searching for approval. We don't need to, I mean, like, there had to have been some reason that he betrayed his friend, right? You don't just go do that. There's something he's seeking out. There's some reason he's doing that. He thinks that's the best thing he can do at that point. And he just missed it. Like, Jesus is enough. He doesn't have to go try to earn his way to heaven or earn his way into, like, the good side of the Pharisees or the scribes or the Sanhedrin or whoever. I think Jesus was enough, and he just missed it. And I think that's just, like, really important to stop and realize. Like, sometimes we're seeking something else, and we just have to stop and realize, wait, Jesus is right here. He's enough. I don't have to seek any further for that. And I think the other thing that is just kind of obvious about this is, like, we can't hide stuff from God. And I don't, sometimes that sounds like a, I don't know, God is always watching to strike you down kind of thing. And it's not that, but it's like, we're not sneaky. Like I think sometimes we get like this little like, ooh, I'm so clever. And it just looks so hokey when you're like, Judas, what are you doing trying to like kiss Jesus and be like, oh, hey, buddy. Well, those soldiers, they must have just followed me. Or, like, I don't know. Like, what's he? It just looks ridiculous. I think sometimes we look so ridiculous. Like, seriously, what are we doing when we just try to, like, I don't know, just massage our ignorance or our sin or something to just look like not so bad? No, I didn't know. I just think it's a little silly sometimes. And that's kind of what I see. I don't know, when I look at this and try to really think through, like, what was going on with Judas? And I just want to pray about that. and then we'll just move on. Jesus, I pray that we would realize that you're enough. And I pray that, I know that we make silly decisions and we make just wrong moves and we betray you and we do that. And why we do that, I don't know. And why we seek other things other than you when you are more than enough, I don't know. And I just pray that we would have our eyes opened to just see the life that is truly life from you instead of looking for it with other people. Another person that this is about is Peter, right? Peter's going on here, and Peter's got a backstory too, right? I mean, kind of the same, right? He's been with Jesus for 3 years. He was trusted. He went out with the 12. He went out with the 70, but he's also like a leader among the leaders, right? He's one of the first, you know, it's him and his brother Andrew that were the first ones. He's been there from the absolute beginning. But there's so many exclusive things that Peter does. It's kind of interesting, like as I was just kind of going back through looking at, like, he's the only one that Jesus like came to his home and like healed his mother-in-law and like healed his relatives and did stuff out of his home. He's the only one that got called out on the water to walk on the water with Jesus. Only Peter, James, and John were allowed to go into the house when they went to raise Jairus' daughter from the dead, right? Like everyone else was there up to that, but they're the only ones that got to go in. When Jesus asks like, who do people say I am or you know, who... whatever, and then he says, and who am I? Well, the Spirit of God reveals to Peter to say, oh man, you're the Christ. Like that's who the Spirit tells, right? And Jesus tells him directly. He's like, you are the foundation that the church is going to be built on, right? Like you're the guy. And then he says, and the power of hell will not overcome you, right? That's pretty significant. Only Peter and James and John went up on the mountain for the transfiguration. It was Peter and John that went to set up the upper room, right? Like he's in a position of authority or kind of exclusivity even among the 12. And maybe that's why he's the one who pulls the sword and doesn't even wait, right? It's just like, I love that the question gets asked, right? Should we strike with the sword? Yes. And he just goes for it. I mean, it's pretty typical of Peter, but it makes sense because that's like kind of what he does. He's the guy. He's just the guy. He just goes. He does it. He's in that position. And so he just gives it his all. But unfortunately, like, he wasn't a soldier. And, like, it just strikes me as wildly curious and, like, a little bit convicting that, like, the best he had was just totally, like, accidentally cut someone's ear off. And, like, let's just think about this, all right? Like, how do you even swing a sword to cut someone's ear off? It's, like, remarkably tricky, especially the right ear if he's right-handed, because that means he's coming from the backside, right? But so, like, if you go to slice someone's head off, right? Somehow you miss and you hit the ear, but it has to go down. So you're just like, I don't know. If you go to chop, you just missed his head completely, right? And you got his ear. If you go to stab, I don't know, like the organs are down here. Like, what are you trying to do? Like, I imagine that he tried to, okay, but it's got to be backhand, right? Because if he's right-handed, it's coming from this way. So now it's probably not the best, like, move, is the old backhand, right? My guess is he goes to chop his head off, misses, slaps broadside on his head. It surprises him so much that he kind of drops the sword and then it just, like, slightly falls, right? I mean, he's just like, he's a mess. He's, like, all over the place. And the best he had was, like, that was the best attack right there. It was, like, got someone in the ear, right? And it's kind of lame because the best he had was 100% counter what Jesus was trying to do, right? Like Jesus was not, he was not for violence. He was against violence. He had to be turned over to be crucified to save the entire world. And like Peter was right there. Like he'd been following so close the whole time. And I just think when I try to put myself in those shoes and realize what's happening, and then I extrapolate it to my real self and not my Peter self, I just think like, man, like we may have like a close, intimate relationship with God. I mean, praise God that we do, right? But when we don't do what we're supposed to do, like whether that's what God has called us to, like individually, like a very specific calling, or just like in general, just like living out, you know, a life that's in line with kingdom values, or corporately as a church. Like when we don't do what we're supposed to do, like not only does it get awkward for us, but we might actually do more harm than good. And I think that's like I don't preach these things to you. Like this is speaking to me too. And I don't know. I feel like there might be a sense of what? Warning sounds like the wrong word, but just like, I just think we need to like take heed with that. Like if we're not doing it, doing what we're supposed to do, we might actually end up doing more harm than good. Like put that in our own lives, not like a sweet action sequence, right? But just like balancing the budget or working with your coworkers or like how you parent your kids or just like whatever, right? But I think we really need to sit on that for a second and just think, like are we really willing to stop our, you know, piddly little things that we think is our best foot forward and just let God's plan work? I mean, really surrendering, right? Like surrendering our best ideas. What would that have looked like, right? If Peter's like, should we strike with the sword? Because I will, but I'll wait till you tell me. I'm ready. Like, I'm ready, but just tell me and I'm ready. But I will wait. Jesus, I will wait. This is a really good idea. It's my best idea, but Jesus, I'll wait. The time might be past by now. Like, they might see, it's not a surprise attack, but I'll wait. It's my best idea, right? Like, what a story, right? And I just think, how many times did we, like, oh, we're gonna, I told myself I'd stay away from specifics, but you know, we're gonna, and it's our best idea, and it's just, what would it look like if we surrendered that and just waited? And God, I pray that we'd surrender those things. I pray that you'd give us hearts that would surrender our really awesome ideas and just let you do the things that you need to do to bring your kingdom in its fullness. And just change us to know you deeply so that we can live out that kingdom. There's another person. I feel like I'm going really fast. Maybe it's like hard to jump into these different shoes, but what are you going to do? There's Malchus. Malchus gets his ear chopped off. That's the receiving end. And we don't hear it here, but John tells us his name was Malchus. And everybody has a backstory. Everybody, right? Like he's like a guy. Like this is like his tiny little spot, right? He's remembered for. But he's like a person. Like had years and years of history, maybe even years of history of seeing Jesus around. I don't know. And even if we don't know what it is, we can still, I think it's still worth just pausing again and just appreciating that this is like, it's not just, that's the way it is. It's just these couple verses. Like this unfolded. This was real life unfolding for this dude too. So I might have to take some liberties with like creating a backstory, but I just think it's helpful to just think about that. He's like a real person, you know? And he's got it pretty rough, for starters. For his entire life, people have been calling him Malchus, right? And that's just like, you're starting rough right there. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. It's Chus. I don't know if that helps. Malchus, yeah. Malchus, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Malchus. Yeah, exactly. It's rough, right? It's rough being Malchus. I know, right? On top of that, he's a slave. So let's just think that, right? He's a slave. So that's not good. And slaves, you know, sometimes were like, that was like their job, but still, he's a slave. Malchus, he's a slave. Yeah. I'll tell you why. Because he's Malchus. Yeah. Yeah? I dare you. You be. Yeah. Nah, that's cool. I appreciate it. We're constructing a sermon right now. Yeah. Malchus is the name of a one-eared dog, for those of you who are, should be the name. Is that, yeah? I'm just catching up. Jess and Josh are going to get a one-eared child named Malchus. Sweet. Sweet. Got it. So, let's just say, let's just create a story, right? Again, I mean, I'm not trying to like invent scripture. That's wrong. But like just to appreciate that he's a person, right? Like let's say Malchus just like, I don't know, like met a girl, right? And he's been like meeting her down at the aqueduct after work. Or I don't think they had one of those, but whatever. They had aqueduct. Oh, sweet. Yeah, right? So she's like, you know, going to go check out some engineering. You know, I mean, it's Malchus, right? And he's like, I don't know, I'm trying to impress her. And so he goes to his boss, you know, the high priest. He's like, can I get a promotion? I'm sick of doing the, you know, just the laundry or whatever. I don't know, whatever slaves did. And he's like, yeah, you can be a soldier in my army. He's like, yes, yes. Lois is going to be pumped. Or is that a New Testament name? Lois? I think so. Yeah. He's like, so he's like, Lois is going to be pumped. I'm going to be a soldier. And he's like training. And then he finds out we're bringing in a bad guy. There's this like rogue guy starting this new movement. He's going to start a revolution. We're going to bring him in. So he's been telling Lois about it. And, you know, I'm not going to see you tomorrow night at the aqueduct. We're bringing this guy in. And he gets these like, because you would, if you were Malchus, you would be like, maybe I'll be the guy. Maybe I'll bring him in, this rogue criminal, this bad guy. And then, you know, like the other soldiers, they're gonna look at me and think, wow, that guy's cool, you know? Because you would, because you're people. We are, right? You just think about this. So this is your first mission. You're gonna go bring in the bad guy. And you get bested by a fisherman, right? Like it's just rough for you. Because your name is Malchus. And you get bested by a fisherman. And think, I mean, first, it hurts, right? You're like, you just got hit in the face with a sword, right? You're like, oh, it hurts. And you're like, I think about like, oh, I think you ripped my mole off, right? It's like that kind of, oh, I think you ripped my ear off, right? But then as soon as you realize that you have no ear, you're like, oh, shoot. What's Lois going to think? I told her I was going to like get this guy, right? And then maybe, I don't know, maybe it's even worse, right? And you're down and you hear the commotion and you're like, oh no, we're all going to die. They're attacking, right? It's just this is the end. Maybe. And then you realize, wait, the bad guy's reaching for my ear, right? Put yourself in those shoes, right? When Luke Sherman cut his thumb off, he tried to pick it up. And then you realize that like his body, like part of his body was on the floor and he like had to like recoil, right? So Jesus like picks up his ear, right? And like puts it on, like the bad guy, right? Puts it on and by no faith of your own, you're healed. Or I can't remember whose shoes were right now. By no faith of his own, right? Malchus is just healed, miraculously healed. Like his ear is just like reattached. And he's just standing there. Like he didn't have to believe. He didn't have to do anything. And I think it's just, it's worth just sitting in Malchus's spot for a little while to just like realize like Jesus' kingdom is totally different than what we are surrounded by. Like I cannot imagine like every expectation he had going into that and then just blown away. And the stuff that Jesus has been preaching, he's just doing, right? He's just like love your enemies. He's like, this guy's here to attack me or arrest me or whatever. He's like, hang on, I got your ear. Let's do this, right? Restoration and healing, like brokenness, like that's what Jesus was about. And he's like, hang on, I'm doing this, right? Noticing and caring for the least, he's doing it. I mean, aside from Jesus and Judas and Peter, which we all know already throughout Luke, like Malchus is the only person named in this story. Like all the high priests, the officers, the temple, like what? They're forgotten. Like nobody knows who was there. None of them were named. But Malchus is named. Like, that guy's always going to be remembered. You know, like, because Jesus noticed him. And I just think that, I don't know, I think Jesus illustrates just how radically, I mean, in his interaction with Malchus, just how radically different it is to live God's kingdom out. So, Lord, help us to do that. Help us to live just radically different. It doesn't have to be radical and big. It can be very small things, but just radically different to notice people and to just pray for restoration and to use words and actions that bring that restoration and that healing, counter that brokenness, to love our enemies, all that stuff that you preach, would you help us to do that? That people around us would experience you just like Malchus experienced you. I'm just going to keep going. I'm just going to keep looking at people. We're just going to keep flipping gears. Is this a weird sermon? Are we doing okay? Yes, it is. Yeah, so many shoes. I know, right? Check this out. Try these shoes on. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the priests, the officers, the elders, the Sanhedrin, and the temple guard. It's a lot of shoes, right? And like, oh, those things are sick. Not in a good way. It gets a little muddled to actually figure out who was actually even there, right? I mean, this Luke says the chief priests and the officers and the elders. I know that there was different parts of that and different people played different parts in the whole unfolding of the story, but like as a whole, they've got a complicated backstory, right? And it only gets worse moving forward, right? It's like they paid Judas 30 pieces of silver, right? And said, turn this guy in so we can kill him. Then he comes back and says, this is wrong. I've sinned. I turned it over an innocent man. And they're like, yeah, we can't help you with that. It's like, wait, they're those people who are supposed to have people come and like give sacrifices and like I don't know. It's just weird. And so then he like throws the money at him, runs out, and they're like, oh, we can't spend this money. This is blood money. And they're like, it's your own money. Like, it's just, if anything, it's just a case study on the human condition, right? Like, we need a rescuer. And just maybe, like, just serves as a simple warning. This stuff can get really twisted and really messed up. And I don't want to spend a ton of time focusing on the brokenness. Like, we've hit the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the priests and the officers and the elders and the temple guard and the Sanhedrin enough. I would rather focus on the restoration and that, you know, we always say, like, as we look at Scripture, like, well, what does this tell us about God? What is this? Well, it would be important for us to just step into Jesus' shoes too then and just look at this, like, through his eyes and through what was happening for him. And everybody has a backstory, right? Like, he's got the last 22 chapters of Luke. Like, that's his backstory. And I'm not going to go back over the last 3 years of preaching and sum that up, but I will go back to just the last passage. From just a couple weeks ago, Molly mentioned, you know, sometimes making the decision is harder than doing the act itself, and just that sitting in the garden and praying and just sweating blood and like, man, if there's any other way to do this, like, just imagine that's you, right? Just like wrestling with God, like, I know I have to do this, but if there's any other way we can do this, and realizing like Jesus had a choice. He could have called it off, right? He could have been like, nah, never mind. I'm just going to like run away or whatever, right? Or gone out swinging. He could have been like, yeah, Peter, get your sword. Let's start a revolution. Like, he could have done that stuff. But he just decided he's not going to. He's going to go through with it. He knows he's going to be separated from God. He knows he's going to die, presumably a painful death. He knows he's being betrayed by one of his 12 closest friends. His followers, including their like first in command, totally don't understand the task he's leaving for them, nor the values that he stands for. And yet, when there's pain in front of him, in spite of that being from the opposition, he has mercy. And where there's brokenness, now there's healing and restoration. And in Matthew, the story is a little bit more about how he, you know, Peter strikes with the sword and he's like, no, wait. And he actually gives them guidance and talks them through, like, you know, some correction and some guidance. Like, this is not how we're going to do it. And explains and takes time to correct them and guide them into, like, no, this is what we're doing, guys. This is my kingdom coming. His eyes are still on the prize, you could say, right? He says, I could call 12 legions of angels to come in here and rescue me and prove who he is, like, right? But he doesn't do it. He submits to these people who he gave authority to in the first place in order to see God's rescue plan come through. And it strikes me with this, just thinking about just how consistent Jesus is with all the stuff that he does. And if God's kingdom were just a set of rules or like a religious system or a philosophy to live by or something, we would see some slip somewhere in this story. I mean, this is like the rubber is hitting the road. This is high pressure. But we don't. Jesus was so in tune with what God was doing. There was nothing else on his radar except the way that God was calling him to live. And we just keep seeing him living out the kingdom. And just like the people in front of him, whether they're his followers or the people opposing him or whatever, he's just continuing to do those things, to meet those needs, to have mercy, to submit, to just all that stuff in the midst of all of this. And so, Lord, I just pray that just like Jesus just stayed completely consistent to living out your kingdom, and he knew you so intimately, would you do that in us? Would you just allow us to just know you in such a way that no matter what trials we come up against, whether they are just big and bold and awful or they're just sneaky and manipulative, and they just wear us down over time or whatever, that we would just see people, we would see a way to bring your love and bring your restoration, that you would just work through us. That we would just be so in tune with you and so consistent with doing your work. And that's a lot. But I just really pray that for us. And just ask that you would just do that work in us even now, just as we go from here into this week. In your name, amen.